All right, we're going to start. We're still waiting for one person for a quorum, but I think we can start with the bills. The first bill on the agenda is House File 112, Representative Nelson. We have a quorum, so the committee will come to order. Let's move the minutes, if we can, quick. Representative Bolton, will you move the minutes from February 9th?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the minutes from February 9th, Tuesday.
All right. Any questions on that? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Those minutes are adopted. All right. And I will move House File 112 to get it before us.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Chair Thiessen and members of the committee, House File 112 is a bill that provides for a payment rate adjustment to allow an intermediate care facility in Brooklyn Park to change its current configuration to care for developmentally disabled residents. The current 32-bed facility is operated by Homeward Bound, would be reconfigured to provide 4 6-bed facilities for persons with developmental disabilities. In making this change, there is a transitional cost that requires a higher interim rate that then will be needed, that there will be need for a somewhat higher rate payment after to operate in this configuration over the long term. This new configuration provides for smaller settings for persons with developmental disabilities and is an effective way to serve this population. I have with me Don Treib from Homeward Bound, the organization which is seeking to reconfigure this, their services, and Mr. Treib will explain more about the request and what, and will stand for questions from the committee.
Okay, welcome to the committee, Mr. Treib.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. Yeah. To members of the committee as well. Thank you for allowing me to appear on behalf of Homeward Bound and House File 112. My name is Don Priebe, P-R-I-E-B-E. I'm the Homeward Bound CEO, and I'm also the president of ARM, a trade association that Homeward Bound and similar organizations belong to. 24 individuals would be covered by House File 112 in the plan you see before you. The other 8 individuals, making up the total of 32 who live there, would be covered by some kind of a waivered service plan. The individuals who live at this facility are among our most vulnerable Minnesotans, and by that I mean that they have a combination of severe intellectual disabilities, physical disabilities that severely limit their mobility, their communication, and in many cases their range of motion, and medical conditions that often require sophisticated or expensive health care services. I understand that the state has financial difficulties, and I want to thank you for working as hard as you all do to find a principal compromise that solves these difficulties. And while understanding them, I'm still here today because I do think it's important to keep unmet needs in front of the committee so that when an opportune moment arrives, the committee is sufficiently informed about these needs so that it can make knowledgeable decisions about them. I would like to emphasize the benefits of passing House File 112 to the committee, and I think there are 3. The first is that its passage would allow 32 individuals with severe disabilities to share in the benefits and the joys of community living. And it would also further the state's policy of transforming its service system for people with disabilities from larger facilities to smaller homes. Second, it would give 32 individuals with compromised health conditions a better chance at improving their health. Just as those who used to live at the facility and have moved to smaller homes have seen those kinds of improvements. And third, I believe that its passage would be a major step forward in fine-tuning a model for lowering health care costs for individuals with severe disabilities and compromised health care conditions by transforming how their health care is coordinated. Let me expand a little bit on these 3 points. First, individuals with severe disabilities have a right to live in the community in home-like settings so that they can experience the joys of a real life. Research, the consensus of industry professionals, and Homeward Bound's experience itself have confirmed that individuals with severe disabilities flourish in smaller community settings. They're more satisfied with their lives and where they live. They have more privacy. They experience more family contacts and more community contacts. Second, in terms of improving their health, we've seen dramatic improvements in the health conditions of individuals who used to live at the larger facility and then moved to smaller residences. I can cite the example of two individuals who once lived at the larger facility. In the year before they moved to a smaller home, one individual was hospitalized 15 days that year, and the other individual was hospitalized for 53 days. Once they moved to the smaller home, those hospitalizations went down to zero. It was that dramatic. Many providers, including Homeward Bound, have created a new model of smaller homes that lower health care costs. These homes feature 24-hour nursing along with tightly coordinated health care managed by a nurse manager at the home. Our experience, as I mentioned before, in managing one such home has seen a dramatic drop in hospitalizations and the use of other health care services and has saved the state many dollars. We've also seen dramatic improvements in the quality of life of these individuals as well. What we're proposing is to take this concept of a smaller medically oriented home that is funded by the CAC waiver or the Community Alternative Care waiver and apply it to ICFMRs. We will assure, obviously, that individuals who live at the home who might be eligible for the CAC waiver itself would have a chance to become eligible for it. But what we really want to do is take the benefits of this kind of model and apply it to a smaller ICF model for those who may not be eligible for the CAC waiver but who still have very high health care needs. The aging of our population at the larger facility means that their health care needs are expanding. In 2008, the 32 individuals were hospitalized 195 days total. In 2009, that rose to 204 days, which was an increase of about 4.5%. Another way of looking at what we're proposing is to suggest that we're adapting the concept of a medical home. As I understand it, the original concept of a medical home involves assigning the individual's primary care clinic as the medical home through which all medical care is coordinated. What we're doing here, we think, is adapting that and making the residents the person's medical home through which everything is coordinated. We do this by establishing relationships, very close working relationships, with the primary and the specialty providers, healthcare providers, and therefore we're able to manage things like hospitalizations, medication and treatment administration, nutrition, nursing care, and attention. In sum, Homeward Bound shares the committee's commitment to serve those most in need and its efforts to build a strong, vibrant community. I urge the committee to carefully consider House File 112. Thanks again, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee for your gracious attention, and I will answer any questions that are posed.
Thank you. And just to clarify, the motion is to, you know, recommend to pass and refer to Finance Committee. So, Representative Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We're grappling with a lot of challenges in these areas in the years ahead with budgets, and I'm just trying to understand further the causality in terms of when you go from the larger model to this, the six-person home, mm-hmm. why people become healthier or have fewer hospitalizations. Mm-hmm. Because I also think there might be, and then I also would like to reflect on a possible downside. I mean, with other kinds of group homes in my community, and I live in a more suburban community, you know, transportation issues are huge, you know, for these facilities. Then you can't have as much specialized equipment in the home, possibly, because it's a small, you know, duplicate that you could have a larger one. Or you might not have room for an on-site exercise facility with adapted, you know, technology in a six-person home that you might be able to afford at a 32-bed facility kind of thing. So on the positive side, when you say that they appear from the data, the two examples you give, to have become, you know, lower hospitalizations, healthier, what's creating that, that improved health?
I think, first of all, it's living in a smaller facility. If you're an individual who is exposed to large numbers of people who are themselves ill, you're exposed to less. Second, I think in a smaller facility with 24-hour nursing or daily nursing, which is what these facilities will offer, you get more hands-on nursing attention and care. At our current facility, we're only able to afford two nurses each shift for 32 individuals, so it's a 1 to 16 nursing ratio, whereas at these houses it would be a 1 to 6 or 1 to 3 nursing ratio. So that's where you can get the kind of care and coordination in these smaller homes.
Well, then a follow-up question, or maybe you can expand on this when it gets to the Finance Committee then, is if we're moving from a staffing ratio of 1 to 16 to 1 to 6, despite what you said about the savings with less hospitalization, the finances of the model, is there the per diem cost actually higher in this smaller model? Or the,
Yes, per diem would be higher.
And how much higher are we talking about?
Mr. Preby?
Approximately $90 a day. On average per person?
Higher or?
Higher.
Higher than in the larger facility.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Preb. I'm a little confused. You're going to continue to have the smaller facilities be licensed as intermediate care facilities with a comprehensive rate, and yet your handout and your testimony talks about a new use of the CAC concept, which is a waiver program, and if we are setting a precedent of a new use of CAC, which has really traditionally been used to support people living in family-based homes rather than organizational-run homes, I think we need to highlight that and make sure that we really understand what the precedent is that we might be setting. So I was really confused to see the discussion of CAC, and if you could just help me clarify what's happening here.
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm sorry for the confusion. I was citing the idea of the CAC waiver in two different ways. One is we would have all of the 32 individuals have their eligibility assessed for the CAC waiver, and if they were found to be eligible, then that's the waiver they would move into, and we wouldn't need the ICFs to serve them. For those who were ineligible for CAC, what I'm suggesting is we create ICFs that mimic the kinds of services that CAC provides. So I'm not actually asking that the committee consider changing the CAC waiver in any way. It would just be in the design of the services for the ICF.
Mr. Chair, and to our witness, then I'm to be clear that this is not a new use of CAC to use it in this particular setting? Okay,
no.
I misunderstood that. Thank you.
No. Further questions? Representative Abler.
And I realize this is the Policy Committee, not the Finance Committee, but I was just trying to do some quick math, and I didn't get done in time. And I'm sorry I'm late, so I might have missed part of this. I don't think so if I'm asking my comrades here. So there'll be a net cost to this at the end of the day for the there'll be 24 served here in some cost neutral thing, and then 8 more people in the CAC waiver. That'll be an additional cost based upon current costs, or have I got that wrong?
Mr. Peavy.
Our suggestion would be that we create 4 ICFs for 24 of the individuals, and that would increase their costs from what they are now would increase. The individuals who would be found, who would be go through the CAC and or a DD waiver or a CADI waiver process, would follow the typical county process of assigning costs to whatever services they would need. So in this case, it is a conversion for those individuals, for the 8 individuals moving into either the CADI, CAC, or DD waiver those ICF beds would be eliminated.
Okay, and I'm nervous to get very far on the finance here, but
go
I.
Go ahead.
But it's but it sounds like, and we'd like smaller, newer places. I think you'll find people are friendly to that, and don't like big places that are old and you know. So I think that's the good thing about this. But if just to caution you, if there's a net fiscal increase on this thing for the 32, if you look at the pot of what they're going to need, it's you may have to find another design. It's kind of lean time, so I'll leave it at that, Mr. Chair. Thanks.
And in fairness, I think Mr. Priebe acknowledged that at the very outset of the hearing, that if an opportunity were to arise to move in this direction at some point in the future, it's to kind of inform us as to what's available. Although I do think, well, Representative Huntley had a question.
Mr. Chair, and to the witness, do you have numbers on the decreased hospitalization and the savings to the medical assistance based
on that? Mr. Priebe.
I don't, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I don't have any official numbers, but I do know that the numbers on the hospitalization are numbers that come from our experience. So my guess is the savings would be whatever the average cost for hospitalization is in the state times the number of days of hospitalization that were eliminated. That would be my guess, but I don't have
official
numbers.
If you could get me the number of days, hospital days that are eliminated, and I'll make a few phone calls to find out what it's got to be at least $1,000 a day, probably $2,000-$3,000 for a hospital stay.
That would be my guess. I'd love to do that, Representative.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any other questions? Okay. And I think, I do think as we move forward here, that some of the questions, especially raised by Representative Bunn and Representative Abler about weighing kind of this size issue, and Representative Huntley to be actually too, and the ultimate cost issues, the size issue versus and quality of life, and how we balance those two things out is something that we do need to take a much closer look at. And, that's just, I think, for another day, perhaps, as we move forward. All right, seeing no further discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 112 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. All in favor of the motion say aye.
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 All opposed? That motion prevails. Thank you very much. Representative Gardner. Representative Gardner moves that House File 298 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe before you, or I guess we've moved it, I can just explain the path of the bill. It's a little complicated just to alleviate any concerns.
Okay.
This bill has stuff that probably will need to be seen by Commerce and Civil Justice and perhaps Transportation, but it has a lot to do with saving money, so after conferring with Representative Huntley, we thought we would get a fiscal note to see if it saves money. Otherwise, it's kind of not, doesn't make sense to go that
way. So we're going to finance first and then re-refer it from there to these other committees?
Okay. Unless anyone feels strongly differently. I do have a quick author's amendment that I think you got electronically, 24 hours plus.
Yep.
This just strikes Section 4, which has to do with a tax exemption. I'd like to move the A10 2040 author's amendment to delete Section 4.
Any discussion on that, members?
Chair, does he need a motion? I'll be happy to move the bill.
He's on the committee, so he's okay. I think we're okay. So any discussion on the amendment, a motion? Seeing none, all in favor of the amendment say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was approached by the folks at Merrick, Inc., which is a not-for-profit organization that serves folks with developmental disabilities in the North Metro. They actually serve some clients on my block in Shoreview. We have a lot of organizations that have fleets of vehicles which pick up people for day training and habilitation. And we have a situation where, because of various rules and other barriers that Mr. Barker here will talk about, we have buses that could actually be picking up more people with fewer buses, so that we could actually consolidate and rationalize the capacity of existed taxpayer-funded transportation assets. And so I'll turn it over to John Barker from Merrick Inc., who can talk about it a little bit more.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is John Wayne Barker. I'm the executive director of Merrick Inc. I'm pleased to be here, Chairman Thiessen and committee members, legislative staff. The genesis of this legislation started in the session immediately following 9/11 as we started to realize differences that we were going to have to cope with. And it sort of languished there for a number of years until our discussions with Representative Gardner encouraged us to bring it back to you all. It's really quite a simple bill on its own merits. It's really looking at making sure that we are not defined as a carrier for hire, because we do not intend to transport anybody other than our own clients or the clients of other DTNH providers. So they are similar people receiving similar services and similar funding. And so we're really not available to hire for the general public or for other our other citizens in the state of Minnesota. It's also trying to reestablish the authority of the state of Minnesota as who can drive and who cannot drive vehicles. We're getting increasing pressure from the insurance industry as to age limits of drivers of some of our vehicles. They do not want to permit people of certain age to drive the vehicle based on some statistical data versus our actual experience. And with workforce issues for all of us and qualifying conditions to hiring people, it's becoming more and more difficult to find staff that can actually drive these vehicles on a daily basis. And then the third area that Representative Gardner spoke to was the reality that in some cases a group home serving four people with disabilities has four different vans pulling up twice a day to either load or unload one passenger at that residence. And it is something that the providers, in response to legislative encouragement to become more efficient, we would like to. But the obstacles are really in the insurance arena that the providers do not want to permit us to transport clients of other programs. And so for us to become more efficient and more environmentally responsible, we really need some leadership from our elected officials that gives us the tools necessary to coordinate and collaborate on these rides to and from homes and work. And with that, I'll just open it up to questions.
Mr. Chair, I would point out, too, that I have spoken with the folks at the Insurance Federation of Minnesota and the Trialers Group, and they, you know, if this bill does go to Commerce and Civil Justice, they'll give their input there. But right now our purpose is to really talk about the human services implications about how we can make our fleets more efficient.
Okay. Good point. Any questions, Member Representative Lopp?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Gardner. I think it's a great idea to try and, at least in the areas where they're concentrated, to increase efficiencies. Makes a lot of sense. I do have one, and I think it's a legitimate human service concern, and that is Section 1, Subdivision 1. An insurer may not prohibit a day training and rehabilitation transportation provider from utilizing anyone with a valid Class A driver's license. And I believe that anyone who's connected with serving and providing services to vulnerable populations, we have some criminal background check requirements, we have some other things that are related to providing a human services to a vulnerable population, and I'm assuming that you would not want to be exempt from that kind of requirement. This just kind of says anyone with a driver's license can do it, and I know we've had some situations, unfortunately, where people have taken advantage of vulnerable populations that they have been transporting, and so I'm hoping we're keeping those background checks and other things as part of it.
And staff can look at that, but the way I read this, this is just all those requirements would still apply. This is just saying insurers can't deny, the insurance company can't deny someone from driving.
Yeah. Chairman, and I'm sorry, my eyes aren't good. I can't see your
Representative Loeffler.
Representative Loeffler. Yes, this this only applies after somebody's been hired, and somebody can only be hired if they pass all those licensing requirements. Did that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And then the section 3 on STS, what is that doing exactly?
Again, our Chairman Thiessen, our intent was to have the transportation regulations consistent and clear that we are not a carrier for hire.
That works with that part?
Yes.
Okay. I got it. Okay. Any other questions, members? All right. Seeing no further questions, Representative Gardner renews his motion that House File 298 be recommended as recommended to pass as amended and be re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Did you want to say anything else?
I was just going to suggest, Mr. Chair, you need one of your bumper stickers that has the pronunciation guide and your name on your plate.
I do need
one of those.
Notice
that this year.
Everywhere I go. All right.
How do you pronounce it?
So, seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much. Tina?
Okay, we have before us House File 2589, and Representative Thiessen, your motion would be that it pass and be re-referred to?
The floor, I think.
To the floor. Okay, Representative moves that House File, Representative Thiessen moves that House File 2589 be recommended to pass and go to the General Register.
Yes.
To your bill.
Thank you. Madam Chair, and basically what this bill does is it moves this CALS program, a Comprehensive Advanced Life Support Educational Program, from the EMSRB to the Commissioner of Health, and I'm going to let Mr. Doyle explain.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Doyle.
Thank you. Excuse me. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is O.J. Doyle. I'm here on behalf of the Comprehensive Advanced Life Support Program. Just briefly, so you know what's entailed, that the program began, was formalized in 2002. It is a distilled training program for rural physicians, nurses, ambulance personnel, and emergency room support staff. It was designed by rural physicians and Hennepin County Medical Center, and rather than the rural healthcare providers having to take advanced cardiac life support, advanced trauma life support, CPR, ACLS, and on, this is all of those programs, the important factors put into one, and the instructors go to the rural hospital rather than having the people come here. This program has been incredibly successful and popular. It is mandated for all healthcare personnel in every United States embassy in the world. And 9 other states have copied this program. Minnesota, the legislature has put an annual appropriation to help keep the tuition costs low because it is very costly. There's a lab involved with training. So it's just, I won't go on about it, but I'm really terribly proud of this program. It's another example of innovative approach to healthcare that was designed in Minnesota and everybody else copies, and I suppose that's probably the greatest form of flattery. It is now expanding. Kenya has started a program as well as other African countries. Now, the money that is used here to subsidize this only goes towards keeping the cost lower for Minnesota healthcare providers. It doesn't, none of this goes anyplace else. Currently, the program is under the Emergency Medical Services Regulatory Board, which deals primarily with ambulance services and some other related aspects of out-of-hospital emergency care. It seems to fit better over in the health department in the Office of Rural Health. The program receives money from the Office of Rural Health. Also, this training program is accepted for training criteria for level 3 and 4 trauma centers in rural Minnesota, which is also under the auspices of the Health Department Office of Rural Health. So by combining this, it will increase efficiencies, have to stop with intergovernmental transfers of funding, and it just seems a more coordinated approach. There is no cost to this. Everything would be shifted within Chairman Huntley's budget, as I understand it.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for members? Okay. Seeing no questions, thank you. Representative Huntley.
Well, Madam Chair and probably the author, would it be possible to send Representative Rood and Representative Murphy and Representative Fritz through this program so that when I get massive chest pains in my committee, they will know what to do?
Yeah, if you pay for it.
Do you not trust us?
We should probably all go through it.
My partner's still a paramedic, and my skills aren't too rusty, so we'll be there for you, Mr. Chairman.
And as far as I know, members, I think the Department of Health is okay with this, and I understand that
there's no opposition
to
this. All right. I was just going to ask if anybody from the department wanted to comment, but I'm seeing some no's over there. So, all right. Thank you very much. So if there are no further questions, and does anybody in the audience wish to testify for or against this bill? Okay. Seeing no other testimony, Representative Thiessen renews his motion that House File 2589 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the General Register. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, no. Motion prevails. Thank you.
And, Madam Chair, just before we adjourn, we are literally waiting for bills to hear. So get your bills in, shorter bills to plug in. We have some other ones that we have to talk about. But so please, if you have stuff that's going to be relatively non-controversial and we can move through quickly, please get them in quickly so that we're not backed up at the end of session. And we dropped one of the bills for today, a Lyme disease bill. So that's why we're not using our full time today, but we do need to. We're going to get crunched at the end here if we don't get stuff in. Okay? Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We are adjourned.
Thank you.